Hey everyone, this is the Hopecast from Hope Church RVA. I am Rachel Dawson and I'm part of our communications team here at Hope, and I'm joined today by our senior pastor, David Thwaite. We are here to have a conversation about common questions in life and faith in under 30 minutes. Today's question and conversation is, what's my responsibility to others? So this kind of has come out of this thinking around what COVID and the pandemic and the last kind of, 18 months have been like in our society. And some of these wrestlings, I think people are feeling with what to do with kind of a sense of self and priority of their kind of individual lives, and as well as kind of this bigger context that we're living in of societies, communities, cultures. So David, what do we do with this question of how we are responsible to others and what we can do in those spaces?
Such a big question. And yes, COVID is like the highly concentrated, intensified version of this question. Mm-hmm. I think many people have thought about this, but COVID, I just am curious, 10 years from now, how are we going to look at all of this? Hopefully, it'll be behind us largely. But how are we going to look at all of this? COVID, in so many areas of life, it somehow, like mysteriously, congealed so many things that have raised intensified versions of so many different things in our lives. And this question of, you know, what's my responsibility to others? That would be, in my mind, like one of the biggies related to COVID. But what's my responsibility to others is not solely a COVID question. So I often talk about how there's so many things in life where we're looking for some appropriate balance points. There's so many things in life where you have two things that have this interactive interplay in the way they roll out in life. I mean, the Eastern version of this is the yin yang. It's the it's the balancing things that operate interactively and together. So we are both individual human beings and we are social. When I say social, I don't mean like party animals. I mean like we come with others. And so for instance, nobody is born an individual. At the very least, it's you and your mother. Even if your mother doesn't have a broad network of relationships, it's two of you. At the very least, you have a connection with another person. Okay, so depending on family life and all that, it may be that you're part of a large family. It may be mom and dad, and you may have gotten born into a scenario where you're the sixth of six kids, you know? So, but there is no such thing as complete isolated individualism. And I've mentioned this in the past. I think we've talked about it on the podcast. This age-old phrase from the British writer John Donne, who says, no man is an island entirely unto himself. Just that axiom right there, to me, is really significant. Okay, so we are both. We are an individual and we are social. Now, much of what's going to frame up from how things develop, I think will have a great deal to do with the culture that surrounds us that we're raised in. Even you can start with your family culture. What was the culture in your family life growing up? Some families, to just try to make obvious examples, will kind of swing the pendulum. I grew up in a family where the message was, it's not about you. And so, for instance, little examples. I was never asked growing up, what would you like for dinner? Right? This is like, mom's making dinner, she's making it for the family, and this is what you're having. Right? The old joke that I think we've talked about, a good friend of mine once told me that he was on a flight and the flight attendant said, sir, we're about to serve dinner. Would you like dinner? And he said, what are my choices? And she said, yes or no. Okay. So even this idea of choices, like, well, don't I get seven choices? Well, the flight attendant's like, no, your choice about dinner is yes or no. So I was never asked as a kid, what would you like for dinner? Dinner is what's on the plate. And we were pressed to eat it, mm-hmm. whether we liked it or not. If you really, really, really didn't like it, you could probably skip it, but we were told you have to try it. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, I know I don't like it mm-hmm. when I've never tasted it. Okay, so the point is, there's a communal thing here.
Yeah.
This is a family meal and you're eating what's served.
Right.
Okay, that's an interesting little idea.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's take a family experience and the decision was made, you know, we're going to do this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to do that. I don't care if you don't want to do that. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's sort of descriptive of like my family life growing up.
Mm.
Okay. Dan Yoon, who you've done podcasts with, who's on our staff, Dan and I have talked about this quite a bit because of cultural differences.
Sure.
Dan speaks about Asian culture. Dan's home country, birth country is Korea. And the Asian cultures generally are much, much more communal.
Right.
So in America, we have much, much more individualism. This is about me. This is about who I am. Little phrases that are sort of in the air, whether they're exact or not, but they're like little quips and quotes like, I just got to be me. And, you've got to be authentically who you are
mm-hmm.
and you've got to be true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
These phrases have a very high individualistic cultural influence behind them.
Right.
Okay, so is that good or bad? I think it's contextual. There are places where it's good and it's true,
mm-hmm.
but there are other times where, like if I was 7 years old and I was told the family's doing this and I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, doesn't matter if you don't want to do it. And I said, well, Mom, I'm just trying to be authentically me. She'd say, I could care less.
Right.
It's
doesn't
not,
matter.
It's not about you. Right. So that culture sort of trains in a certain way,
hmm.
right? Another phrase you might hear is, you know, like the family's going and one of the kids is mopey and unhappy and doesn't want to go. And the answer is, look, the train's leaving and you're going to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're happy on it or not happy on it, we don't care, but you're going to be on it.
Right.
Okay, so that's like a we culture. Mm-hmm. It's more of a communal culture. And you're going to have to put your individualism secondary to the communal thing. So in our culture, American culture, we have this very, very high mindset of independence.
Hmm.
And this is me. This is who I am. This is how I deserve to be treated. This is authentically me.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this play out in a million different ways. So for instance, pick any number of different social issues in our day, and this gets expressed that way.
Mm-hmm.
Go to a communal culture, sort of like Korea, and it's quite different.
Mm-hmm.
The focus is on we, not on me, right? So the focus is much more on the group, not mm-hmm. on the individual. So who you are as part of the group is who you are.
Right.
It's not who you are as a standalone, independent entity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think as I'm saying this, I can imagine somebody listening to it and sort of thinking like in their mind, yeah, I get that, but I'm not sure we do because this is so deeply embedded in the yeah. American psyche.
It's interesting. This even just popped into my head watching the Olympics recently this summer. Even the way that they present names on the screen for the athletes in Asian cultures, the last name is presented first.
Fascinating.
And then the first name. And it was almost like the family name took precedence over the individual name, where for us, it's David matters more maybe than Dwight, where in the Asian cultures, it was always the family name first. And even that just popped into my head.
It's a great insight.
It's so indicative of how you even identify as a self or a person, but for them, it was much more identified by their group first.
Yeah. So the fact of the matter is your phrase, which I appreciate, a self, we are a self.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, are we a self as a completely individualistic entity, or are we a self as we are socially connected and even socially responsible?
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, questions like this are always in the air. And I think they actually get interesting. For instance, they get into questions about laws, like how are laws made? Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants to say, well, I'm going to do whatever I want, and as long as it's not harming anybody else, then there shouldn't be any reason I can't do whatever I want. Okay, well, now you're going to get into an interesting conversation about harming anybody else.
Right.
So I heard a story anecdotally from a number of years ago where a guy had been arrested for speeding. Mm-hmm. And it was on an interstate, and it was late at night. He was going like 95 miles an hour. Ooh. And he was pulled over, and he was given a ticket. And he protested the ticket because he wanted to make this point to the judge. He said, there was nobody else on the highway. It was a wide open highway. I was not putting anybody else at risk. And the judge said, you've put the law at risk. Okay, think about that for a minute. You've put the law at risk. Like, wait a minute. Like, I'm responsible to the law?
Right.
I think the judge's point is, so you're going to decide to make up your own laws on your own interpretation of whether you've put other people at risk or not? The law is a necessity for societal life. So if you're going to decide which applies to you because of your interpretation of it, it's classically American, right? Okay, so let's take another example. Let's say he had had an accident and it required a rescue squad and four police cars to get the person out of his crashed car, which means the rescue squad people were home asleep at 1 a.m. and they had to get up and go. So wait a minute, actually, there is a lot more involved. So here's another interesting thought I've had from time to time. It's just an illustration. You're driving on the interstate because we're in the driving mode and the traffic is relatively heavy. Okay. How many people are thinking, I have a responsibility to all these other cars to drive attentively? Because how about this? If you get in an accident, let's try to make it a minor accident, no big injuries.
Sure.
But you get in an accident which has forced on a four-lane highway, two lanes to be closed to deal with it. You've now made a whole bunch of people have to sit in a traffic jam for 2 hours. And all of a sudden, your idea of, well, I should be able to do what I want, you've just made a whole bunch of people have to sit in a traffic jam for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Some of them maybe had really important stuff they had to attend to.
Right.
So it's just like in the American mind, how many of us are driving on the interstate thinking, I need to drive attentively because of a responsibility I have to all the other cars on the interstate? If I'm honest, I just don't think many people are thinking that.
Yeah.
So it's like this question of individualism versus responsibility to others.
Right. It's striking to me how little we might play out scenarios or the ripple effects or the consequences or just the next things that come from the choices that we make. Because I feel like we often just think, oh, I can just check my phone real quick, you know, as I'm driving down the highway, it doesn't matter. But like you're saying, the implications of what could come from one little choice or decision are so much bigger than just, oh, I need to see this text right now. That's a silly analogy to say. I don't think we often consider that our choice, we might think, oh, this is just a choice for me, or I'm just going to decide to do this or live this way or make this call or speak this way or something, thinking it doesn't matter. The consequences are small. It doesn't have an impact beyond us. But I might argue that it kind of always does. I don't think there's ever, I don't think much that we do, if anything, happens in a vacuum. I mean, somebody might not hear me say it in the moment, but there, it might get shared later in some other capacity. Like there's just so many things we can't possibly comprehend of the impact or the scale or the consequences of the choices and things we do.
Yes. And so in my view, again, I'm going to go back to the way I was raised. Like I was raised in an environment where like, let's say I did something and it harmed another family member in a, like in a modest way.
Yeah.
It would have been typical in my family where I would have thought, well, I, you know, I didn't think about that. I would have been taught you should have thought about that. Were you not thinking about the impact it would have on the rest of the family? So as I'm thinking about this whole podcast, I'm like, I was raised in a family that had a little bit more of like an Asian cultural feel
to
it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you feel like, was there some tension in that for you to be raised in like maybe a family context that might have been a little bit more collective and a little bit more we, but then to be in the, still in the context of an American society that is still very I? How did that play out?
Yeah, I can remember saying this so many times. And here we're like getting at it, right? I was probably when I was like, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, the phrase, it's a free country, I can do whatever I want.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Constant refrain.
Just think about that. It's a free country, I can do whatever I want. Okay, well, the fact of the matter is we know you can't do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. There are laws. People say, well, but you can't legislate morality. Mm. I would say, actually, that's what legislation does. Most legislation legislates morality.
Yeah.
So to say that you can't mug somebody or murder somebody is legislating morality. Mm-hmm. Law often has these social implications connected to them. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's all this invisible stuff that comes along with like individualism. Mm-hmm. Okay. So individualism, I think where it begins to go is, we're raised in a culture that is very consumer oriented, right? So, everything from consumer products to customer service, we want to tailor this to give you exactly what you want. Mm. Okay. My family was like, I don't care what you want. This is what you're getting.
Yeah.
And it is just interesting to see how this plays out. And so, if we begin to be raised that way, now think about the challenges. If you're raised, you can have whatever you want, right? I can remember my mom commenting occasionally, we'd be with another family and the mom would make four different meals for the four different children because she said to each one of them, what do you want?
Yeah.
I can remember my mom, we'd be like in the car after leaving. She'd be like, that's never happening for you. So if that started in your sense of life from the time you're little, okay, consider how this is going to create some real challenges.
Right.
You're on a team at work of six people. If each person is like, I want this exactly the way I want it, how are you going to do teamwork? Teamwork requires a sense of interactive, even compromise, yielding, listening. Okay. Now, another side of the conversation is there are lots of studies that would say this individualistic emphasis in our culture is one of the reasons why America tends to be the leader in the world in things like entrepreneurial endeavors and inventions and innovation. Because there's a lot of attention giving to, I am going to be the person who pioneers this thing.
Right.
So how about the word pioneer? That's a distinctly American type of idea. Mm-hmm. You're pioneering into the West. You're forging on you know, charted territory.
Sure.
Even the spirit of independence, we were talking about this a little bit. Let's go back to COVID for a minute. There are many, many cultures where the spirit of independence is not the same as it is in America. Well, you could say the country was founded on a spirit of independence. Mm-hmm. And some people would get deep into the sociology of this and say that psyche is in the air in America. Like we're overthrowing the king. We're who we are, and we're going to pursue what we demand and want for our own lives and our own rights.
But it's interesting. Even as you're saying that, it's we. Like it didn't one person. It still was a group, and it still was, there was still a collectiveness that came to start that new foundation. So it's interesting kind of the, not maybe it's not hypocrisy, but just the tension that even exists in the ways that we might think we're being independent or forging our own way, but really, we never were.
Right. Okay, so to take this like in a little bit of a biblical direction, if you read the books of Kings in the Old Testament, there is a haunting phrase that comes back around about every 10 chapters in Kings.
Okay.
And the phrase is, those were the days where everyone did what was right in their own eyes.
Mm.
And when you read that, those were not the good days right. for Israel. They were the days of defeat and isolation and hardship and struggle. But it is the phrase in Kings.
Yeah.
This is when everybody did what was right in their own eyes.
Wow.
Like, I'm doing whatever I want to do.
To me, that brings a picture of like lawlessness and just like recklessness
ultimately,
to mind.
Ultimately, isn't that the ultimate destination of
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie? This is an old movie, The Book of Eli.
Yes.
Like, it's almost like that.
Yeah.
Right? Who was at Denzel Washington, right? And it turns into this dystopian landscape mm-hmm. that's the result of what happens. And basically, when you don't participate in a societal responsibility, mm-hmm. you're going to go back to the survival of the fittest, mm-hmm. the strongest wins, mm-hmm. whoever has the loudest, strongest, most powerful voice dominates everybody else. It's not a nice way for life to work.
Yeah.
So where are the balance points? It's a good question. In my opinion, it's probably pretty obvious by now. I think our culture has swung way too far to individualism mm-hmm. and sort of the supremacy of the individual.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pain and fallout. So COVID again, like we all know this, right? I'm not identifying anything that people don't know about. There are people who say, I'm not wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be forced to have to do that. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There are other people who would say, I'm wearing a mask purely because I am trying to reduce my capacity to spread this to mm-hmm. others, mm-hmm. right? It's less about I'm trying to protect myself from getting it. That, of course, may be part of it. But there are people who would say, I'm just wearing a mask because I'm trying to reduce my capacity to spread it. I'm mm-hmm. trying to think about other people.
Mm-hmm.
And this plays out with a lot of emotion
yeah.
and these debates in our culture, of course, everybody can see.
Right.
So when the government mandates something, whoa, that generally doesn't go over well in American culture.
Right.
Right. So people are going to say, what's next? A draconian crackdown from a tyrannical ruler.
Right.
And in the American psyche, it's like, that's everything we're against.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that sniffs of that, mm-hmm. we're opposed to it. Well, on the other hand, laws generally are made for society, for our responsibility to one another.
Yeah.
But this idea, do I ever think about the law, which is the reason I'm going to obey the law is for the societal well-being and my responsibility to other people.
Mm.
I don't know that people think about that very much.
So interesting to me. It's calling to mind time and time throughout scripture where I see Jesus encouraging a love of neighbor and a connection to society, using what we have for the benefit of others, taking, you know, the 5 loaves and fishes from one person's lunch to be able to feed the masses, and just yeah. how often I feel like Jesus is calling us into a place of sacrificial love for others, even this idea of taking up your own cross, of really a dying to self for the benefit of those around us. And I think how it's just striking to me how countercultural that is, especially in an American culture.
Not only especially in American culture, but almost uniquely to American culture, because most of the rest of the world is still today in 2021 much more communal than American culture is.
Yeah.
We're mobile, we're independent, we move, we leave home, we go out and do our own thing. And then we do begin to realize, wow, is my life feeling really disconnected, isolated, lonely?
Mm-hmm.
These are all intertwined kinds of questions. But maybe to kind of put it on a bow here, mm-hmm. and maybe this will also set up a next episode, the culture of the Bible, the culture that that's written in, is highly communal.
Mm-hmm.
It's highly family-oriented, highly patriarchal. It's all about who am I as part of my father's family. And then the next step out is my village.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of this independent, me, myself, and I, is like inconscionable. It's why when you read the story of the prodigal son in Luke 15,
mm-hmm.
to those hearers in that day, the prodigal son who basically said, I'm going to do my own thing, defying my father and my family, It would have been electrifying in its moral reprehensibility.
Yeah, such an affront.
We hear it in American culture, and we're sort of like, that's the cool kid who was the pioneer who's going to go do his own thing.
Right, go get it.
The difference of these cultural norms is huge. Yeah. So how does this play out in terms of my responsibility to a cohesive body of people? My family, my village, my city, my country, or I think we're going to talk about in a future podcast, like my church, if I'm part of a church. Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
Yeah. So I think if we were to come back to this original question of what is my responsibility to others, to me, the kind of sub question we were asking in that is, do I have a responsibility to others? And I would say, and I'm sure you would agree, yes, we do.
Undoubtedly.
And how I think this conversation is leading me to some places of how then can I be in a context or put myself in a space where I am considering others more and having more of a value on my responsibility to other people, maybe sacrificing self a little bit more to love others a little bit better. There's a lot of thoughts to think about in that space.
Yeah. Thanks for the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening today. We invite you to subscribe to the Hopecast on your favorite podcast app. Maybe share this episode with a friend or somebody you'd like to discuss things with further. And if you want to learn more about Hope, you can find us at hopechurchrva.com.